Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, October 18th, 2015, Eastern Standard Time in America. My name is Grantham Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grantham Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm just fine.
Oh, that's good to hear. Do you have a joke to begin with?
Yeah, that was a joke. See, that I'm just fine. But that's not true.
Oh.
I am fine. But I laughed afterwards, and we wonder why. Well, the comedic flair. You see what I mean?
Well, here's the joke. Here's the joke. You said you were just fine, and I say I thought you were Grant.
Oh, well done. I missed that. The punny.
But I wouldn't take it for granted, not at all.
Oh, we would never do that.
Well, and nor should anyone else.
Well, I grant you that. So.
Yes. Well, thank you. And I will grant you something else. I have a question for you. I know
you have
talked
a question?
About this. I
you're,
do.
You're on
I'm
a
on
quest?
A quest. I'm on a quest. Don't take that quest for granted. Can you grant me a quest?
Yes, I can grant you a quest. Since
okay.
We're all granted out.
I know we've talked about this before because, of course, this is one of the platforms of this show. It has to do with one of the platforms, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, you've talked before about the 1930 Geneva Convention that declared bankruptcy.
But,
haven't you,
just,
right?
Yes, I have.
What? Okay, good.
I'd like to
possibly some people who haven't been listening before, maybe this is the first time they're listening to the show, and maybe those
that means
who haven't
they're not paying attention.
You're right.
That
want to pay attention. Might want to know what the significance of that is. Could you delve into that in a way that
everybody
takes for granted?
just to let everybody know, we did not set that up. Not one iota, right? I said I wouldn't editorialize by the fact that I put you up to asking that question. That means we're topic driven on this show. We try to get on the subject.
We're topic non-driven on this show. That's correct.
That's right. We make every effort to be on the subject, right?
So don't take for granted these topics.
Oh gosh. They say, why do they laugh so much about a serious subject? Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it is a joke in a way. I mean, how they ended up bankrupting things because of really just one word, the difference between a note and a certificate, and then you bankrupt the whole world. That is sort of a joke, wouldn't you say?
Kind of weird. But there's... but might you talk about that significance and why it came to be and how it changed the world?
Oh, well, the real problem was that at the time, because they didn't really know that distinction, and they were deciding to, they didn't know how to make to remove the specie currency and not bankrupt everything. They didn't understand the fix that I had to create about 75 years later, meaning that they didn't know how to, again, remove the specie and then back it by another certificate and contract sequence. Now, that sounds complex, and it is relatively, but in fact, it's not, because if you have they created the Federal Reserve note, and all you need to have is to certify it with a document behind it, which should have been the silver certificate. And then when they took those out of circulation, they could have kept them in the banks as redeemable currency, but they weren't thinking that through. See, I mean, they weren't thinking about the significance of the certificate, which amazes me because to me it's very simple. But then if you get into that, it's a matter of timing and urgency. And sometimes in that process, decisions are made without looking at all the details. In other words, you have to make a quick decision because you got the world circumstances on hand. You know, you got starving people you've got budgetary requirements, people need to be paid, and all that business, you see what I mean? So it does get into serious situations if you can't make proper decisions. At that time, they left out a significant variable, and they had to bankrupt everything in the process. All right, but having said all that, you see, the issue is that can we retain a solvency? And that came up a couple of years ago in a think tank discussion with some people in the UK in reference to why can't we gain solvency? And what I've tried to explain is because we've got a problem with math, and I say that a lot, and I think there are a handful of people that understand that. My physicist teacher, my professor in college, understood it, but there are very few people that really can comprehend the fact that math just doesn't work. And when I say that, the mathematicians are up in arms and very upset. But then if you get down to cases and you really converse about the whole subject matter, when you really talk about it, you can see that it is impossible to collectively get things accurate. You can do it individually. In other words, I can do 1 + 1 = 2. I can do that. It may not be correct. And then to push into that realm of it's really idiocy and strange. You said weird, too, because everybody would agree that 1 + 1 = 2, and we use that as an analogy sometimes for simplicity. But I'm trying to say if I do it and 50 other people do it, we'll probably get a different answer. And I say probably, because then you got probability theory and math. You see what I mean? Because you don't really have a certain outcome. And that gets into the physicists and a lot of people aware of the fact that we have degrees of uncertainty, and actually everything is uncertain in an uncertain world. I guess I use the word 3 times within a course of about 6 words. All right, so having said all that, the retention of a bankruptcy remains because the fix that we have, I say we have the way to fix it, but can we implement it? And then my statement of that would be probably 98% chance of not doing it. And then you say, well, if there's only a 2% chance, that really it's the majority considered statistically. All right, or just the fact remains that it's impossible. And that's what I mean. See, so are we stuck in the situation that we are? Perhaps. I don't know, because a lot of my discussion at the very beginning of our shows many years ago, we were talking about the fact that I hadn't implemented the fix and that perhaps that I could, but then on further reflection, it's not possible. And right at this point, I mean, I don't have a construct to do that, to be able to sort it through. It just doesn't exist because we've got the problem with mathematics. You see, so is that stimulating question for you in terms of that? Would you like to ask a question?
Well, how long do you think it took to take the certified silver paper? What is the term I'm looking for? The silver certificate. How long do you think it took to actually take that out of circulation once they decided to do it? Was it over a course of many years?
Yeah, it took about, I think the last certificate came out of circulation officially. Well, not, I mean, there were still the same things lingering afterwards. It may even still be today. But really the bulk of it and the high percentage of it is about 30 years later. I think 1960, early 60s. Is when they really got the majority out of the marketplace. So it took a long time to get it out of circulation, okay? In terms of but now silver certificates are commodities, and they trade them in philatelics. I mean, that's a numismatics is money trading in terms of stamp collecting and money collecting. It's called numismatics. So silver certificates are used that way nowadays in terms of buying and selling them as the commodity that they become, the rare commodity. And then you have to market it and sell it, and you get into a numismatic merchant type thing. Therefore, it's not a medium of exchange any longer. You can't really use it as a medium, but then people can refute that. I have a silver certificate, and I bought a hot dog at Coney Island the other day. Well, okay, fine. You know, isolated cases. I mean, there's always a relative case that comes up. But the whole point to that is that we are pretty much stuck with the bankruptcy because the issue, as I said before, a lot of people discuss online and there's a lot of discussions about, and they have these periodic bankruptcies about every 70 years, cyclical type bankruptcies. But I don't get concerned about that because we're still stuck on this Federal Reserve note that we have been since 1930. So that's why I use the Geneva Convention to target a beginning time and a mindset for people to say, where can we begin to see the problems that we have today? You see, instead of making it too complex, and I think they do make it too complex so that you can't really decipher a fix. And so when I gleaned that in the early part of this millennium, in about 2004, when I came up with a fix, again, it's a theoretical basis, but it's still a knowledge, it's still a thesis, there's a basis for practicality. Before that, we didn't have that. It was like a dark age for 75 years because we really didn't have a concept for it. See, without a concept, you're in no man's land. Would you agree with that? You're a great loss if you don't have a concept. Do you agree with that?
Sure. You have to have a concept. How else do you accomplish anything?
Right, absolutely. And that's the issue. We didn't have a conceptual construct to sort out the problem, right? And then I'm always saying, with a little knowledge, sometimes people are satisfied with that, but they're anxious, there's anxiety over the fact of not knowing, not having knowledge, and people are concerned with that. So when you get a thesis, people are greatly relieved with it. But then they say, well, can we get to implementation, which would be logos? You're talking about synthesis, okay? Synthesis would be pure implementation. So just on a pure philosophical discussion or intellectual discussion, can you ever get to synthesis in anything? Well, now let me ask you, you think you can? Can you ever get to logo? I mean, it's kind of a trick question. So I'm not meaning to set you up, but I'm asking a question. Do you ever think we can get to synthesis in any sort of from an antithetical word, a world? Do you think you can?
Well, that's so you're asking the question and giving me the answer at the same time, right?
If I am, go ahead. Go ahead. I always say you can't ask the question if you don't have the answer, right?
I mean, you're giving me the answer. It's an antithetical world. So how can anybody, if you're lucky if you get two people to agree at one point, so how are you going to achieve synthesis?
Well, you know, but they say, as I said a minute ago, they say that if you're on a quest, you have to, if you ask a question, you have an answer. I said, well, the reason is because if you're on a quest, you better have a sword and your scabbard as you're going through, right? So the answer means the and sword to cut the quest. All right, you may not cut your own quest, so you're going to ask the question of somebody else to cut it. See what I mean? In terms of the answering the question. So that whole basic fundamental part of the whole idea of gathering knowledge, gather ye rosebuds, and that whole idea that once you have it, it smells so sweet. Sorry, Shakespeare, I stole your line and reinvented it. So therefore, see, we're really stuck with the Federal Reserve note. And then people don't really seem to care because it has purchasing power. See, it has purchasing power. And then they always say to me, why do you bother with the discussion and what have you? I say, I bother with it because it's a truth, all right? And what we have right now are people not paying attention to the truth, and we're utilizing a system, a bankrupted system, and I'm putting people on notice and saying, look, do you realize what's going on here? It could have detrimental consequences in the future. But I'm saying could have. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying maybe, probably, could be. So I'm just saying the more truth you can get, you can put things on more solid or equilibrium ground in terms of the way it was supposed to be. We were supposed to have banking equilibrium, and we still could if people would do approximate math. I mean, that's what Andrew Wiles was talking about in 2002 when he did the proof for the Fermi's last theorem. It was a 200-page thesis in proving that ellipses could not be measured or proved, completely proved, all right? So that's why that 200-page thesis existed was to prove you couldn't measure a circle, really, because an ellipse is just a stretched-out circle. So then I've always said that for a long time, even before then, circles can't be measured. But he wrote it in a math proof because now you put it on paper. So the whole idea of my question to you was, can a logo or can we create synthesis in an antithetical world? Well, you can theoretically because I just said it. See, if I'm posing the theory, then that's a possibility theoretically. But in practice, as I'm saying, you have theory, law, and practice. And in practice, can that happen? Well, we haven't proved that yet. See, we haven't proved it. And my proof of it would be the idea of, again, bankers allowing approximate math. In other words, they don't have to get down to the penny in measuring. You allow those pennies to be off by whatever it takes, you see. And then there's an argument they're trying to discontinue the penny, whether fictitious or nonfiction in the past. Well, I mean, because you really don't use them. Everybody puts them in jars and what have you. But in according to the math issue, we don't allow approximate mathematics because bank accounts measure to the penny. See, and that's a huge, gigantic mistake because we find that we're going to be bankrupted cyclically if you do that. And that's why they talk about those 70-year bankruptcies, because it takes that long to realize that all the bank accounts are not being balanced. You don't balance your account. See, because it really isn't possible when you measure as a group. And that's what I'm trying to say. Math, again, is not a collective science, it's an individual science. Individually, it works precisely because you can write down the equations, you can write down the numbers, and you can show, like I said, 1 + 1 = 2. You can write that down and see it, all right? But if somebody puts 1 + 1 = 3, and now you've got an argument against that equation. It's an equation, you see? And that might sound weird and strange, but that's the fact of it. You're talking about the denotation of the way it is. You can see it. You can prove that it's there. You can point to it. People can repeat it. You see, you can say it when you write it down. That's why you have contracts law. Other people can see it. But then what are we doing with that? We're interpreting. See, we're not really getting that completely together in terms of getting enlightenment on it. We're not getting the big aha. Yeah, I really recognize and know what I'm talking about. With that, I can feel it, I understand it, I know it, I'm confident that that's the way it is. See, and that's the real issue. Like you were saying before, that in terms of misinterpretation or interpretation of something that is, anybody's interpreting. See, and that is the real issue. That's hard to explain because it goes into philosophical issues. See, I mean, it slides over into that world. And then you really can't get a fix pretty much on anything. That's why philosophers are denigrated most of the time, and they're picked on by the mathematician, if you will, or people that think in the right-left brain type thing, and they always think there's solid matter and all that, which I don't disagree, because you can trip and fall, and you can feel it. You can feel pain and things, and those are very real. So I'm not taking away from the empirical world to make it enigmatic, make it just a complete mystery, because it's foolish to do that. We disrespect our physicality. It's foolish. Like, you can't, like those people that were doing LSD trips in the past or whatever they're doing on drugs, and they jump off high buildings and think they can fly. Okay, you know, that just gets weird. See, like we were saying before, when it becomes strange that you wouldn't really want to even discuss it because somebody's going to condemn the whole thing, I'm okay with that. You know, I back off from strange things, albeit sometimes people want to talk about those things. You can do it, but then where's the proof in all of it? See, the whole bankruptcy is strange, okay, because it's not supposed to be that way. Why can't we get equilibrium? Well, mainly because it's a low economic cycle. The monetary system is the lowest cycle in the economic curve. And people say, well, I thought it was a really wonderful process. It's not. See, and people don't study empirical economics. You see, or political economics, they don't really like to do it because they're bored with that whole thing. But I've always made it exciting because it's important when you get to the truth in the matter. Like what we talk about here, I think it's very stimulating but the irony is, can we get there? Probably not. You see, and that's silly, right? Wouldn't you agree? I mean, why do I bother if we really can't get there? But again, we're getting closer. Well, but I think it's closer to the truth than what we have. You see what I mean? We've got a load of rubbish out there, and people are confused or upset because they're not trying to pursue the truth, you see? Is it pursuit of happiness? No, be happy and pursue the truth, in my opinion. But we have to pursue the truth, because if we don't, we're going to fall back into a lot of negativity and falsehood. Yeah, that's my opinion. What do you think about that in terms of pursuing the truth? I'll make it simple.
Yeah, I'm all for pursuing the truth. I think we should always pursue the truth, because what's the point of living if you're going to live a life of falsehoods? That's
right,
ridiculous.
Exactly.
That creates nothing but havoc and unhappiness.
Correct. So that means that if you're a casuist, if you're just babbling to hear yourself and think you're intellectual and intelligent, but you're in a circle jerk of nowhere land, if you're not getting to high points, or they say bullseyes and things of that nature, I mean, if you hit a target with a bullseye, it doesn't mean you can't do it again. You see what I mean? It doesn't mean you have to end all in like they do the world champion. And then there was a player years ago, Dwayne Thomas, who played for the Dallas Cowboys. He said, if it's world champions, why do you play it every year, right? If it's just one world champion, that's it. But they do it, you know what I mean? I thought it was very shrewd by him. Of course, he was quite the iconoclast, too. They couldn't get him to go in team meetings. I remember when I used to do that, too. You sit and hang out with 40 sweaty bodies, and they're all guys. Gross. But anyway, that's like politically incorrect, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
And then what are they talking about? Okay, they run the play over and over again. Well, okay. And that was Vince Lombardi. His theory was you run the play over and over again until somebody stops it. And it was real simple stuff. If you're running the same hole and they don't stop the play, keep running it, you know. And that's what he did. It was just so simple. And he was very successful with that whole concept, because it was a simple concept. And just like the fix for the bankruptcy is simple, but can we do it? Again, we've got problems. We've got issues in terms of collective entities that won't capitulate to the truth, that they're still dealing in falsehood, theoretical falsehood, and that's why we're in the world the way that it is, because they're not contending for pursuance of the truth. You see what I mean? They want to stick on a certain falsehood, and then they're stuck. They're stuck in a falsehood, and somebody's trying to say, look, can't you understand the premise is wrong? You know, can't you take that and discuss this idea and further detail? See, they leave out the details because everybody's in a rush. It's a timing thing. Like school, they rush you in school, they rush you during the day. You're going to do really lengthy post-grad work of any length and detail, and then even some of that leaves out things, see? So where's the subject in terms of the, I'm always saying the recommendibus, the last say and whatnot, is a man that can give a lot of details and a lot of information. So he's got to have a decent vocabulary to do that, because now you're defining things and redefining things and making it look a clearer image, if you will. And then you've got the philosopher that says, well, what about the image? If it's the Eastern religionists, if you will, and not only them, they would say, well, it's just a big void. Okay, what are we doing then? If it's just like I said earlier, if we're getting to nothing and uncertainty, then what's the point of it, see? And that's what I mean. And they have the regression therapy say life is worthless and meaningless, but we make the meaning. I'm saying time out, you know. I mean, that's pretty existential. You know. And then I was saying earlier this morning on my morning meeting, I said that essentially I'm an existentialist, but I believe in the supreme deity. Just for a qualification, that because most of them are atheists, right? So I'm always steering away from that. But I thought existentialist that believes in God, right? So did you go ahead and make a comment? We're down in the last few minutes. I really burned up the time tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think you did a show tonight. I enjoyed it. And, well, let me see. I don't know if I have any comments, but I would like to say that I'm not an existentialist, if anybody cares. Probably nobody does. And although I do see their points of view, I do understand their point of view.
Yes. Well, what is existentialism, really? And I call it antithetical individualism. In other words, it's sort of fashionable pessimism. You see what I mean? Because they consider that you do your level best to achieve something, but what's the point if there's no afterlife? You see what I mean? They always say that Nietzsche and Watson and Sartre were all talking about.
Isn't an existentialist the same thing as an atheist?
Oh, I don't know if it's always the same thing, but it's my understanding that most of them, they'll probably get emails on this. My understanding that they're generally atheists. See what I mean? In other words, you're supposed to do your level best to achieve in a lifetime, and then there's nothing afterwards. So it's sort of like, but most of them are very depressive characters. That's why I said fashionable pessimism is really what existentialism is about. There are a lot of very intellectual people, but they really don't, it's a circular argument. There's really no synthesis in it. There's not a dialectic that is achievable. You see, so they get into this uncertainty thing, and then they really are concerned and lost. It's sort of a loss issue. See, and that's really the issue. See, so they get depressed characters. Like, I think Sartre wasn't a very happy person, but he wrote that tome, Being and Nothingness, which I read a few times. It's very powerful and intelligently done. But you see, that's that logic crap, again, I keep saying. I mean, you can be clever and twist words around and make it sound wonderful, but where is the substance to it in reality? Is the substance in the theory, which is antithetical in terms of the logic pattern, the antithesis of the whole thing, you see, which doesn't really get to a conclusion because the mathematicians hold that out. And I'm saying, well, you guys aren't giving enough detail as well. So there's a trap there, the trap of logic. And I'm trying to say, well, the only way you can get out of that is through higher Sanskrit, and I won't bother people with that, or like the Pentecostals do, the speaking in tongues and whatnot. And they say, yeah, but we can't understand that. See, and then they do that stand under business in those particular realms, and they coined that phrase that I had an Indian guide that said, well, we can do overstand. And then when I came back to America, people were using that term, but not lengthy. I mean, people rarely, I never hear people say, do you overstand that? I said, no, I understand it, but I don't overstand it. So, well, I mean, you're going to stand under that information. I said, I suppose I will. Because I'd rather understand it than to overstand it, right? But I'd have to be pretty tall to stand over it, right?
That's right. You have to be.
Unless it's on the ground, of course. What's that?
Yes, no, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, thank you.
I overstand
you.
It.
I'm good. Well, we're down to the last couple minutes, but, you know, I have to fill in about a minute's worth of jargon here. And I, like I said, we didn't get into a lot of the planks of the convention, but I did talk about the fact that they did it because they couldn't really, it was a quick decision, in my opinion. They didn't really think it through well enough to be able to not have to bankrupt things. But I wasn't here in 1930, so it's one of these things where you, after the fact, and you analyze it afterwards to see what's going on with it. But like I said, the idea of the fix is very important theoretically. Okay, in other words, you have the knowledge. We're not in the dark ages, everybody. So that's a very good thing because we do have the knowledge. Maybe it's a minority, but it still exists. Before, and then it's like the revelation of articulating the fix, which I think is important in a state of consciousness, I'll say. Okay, we're getting down to the last minute. I want to thank you for being on the show this week, Gabriella. As usual, I appreciate the few years that you've been with me. You know, I really think it's great, and people really like us together because of our idle banter, right?
Well, I grant them a thank you for that.
I guess we're going to wear that one out for this show, right? Hopefully we won't
yes.
do that anymore next week.
We'll come up with something new for the next show.
Yeah, we always come up with something unique, I think, each week. And it's
right.
a lot of fun to do this with an ironically serious subject, right?
That's
all
exactly
right.
So okay.
I got to kill about 10 seconds. You got to do a dance or sing a song, and don't lose your day job, right? They say when you start singing and nobody really likes it. But what if they really like it? Then you want to keep your day job? if you keep it, you don't want to lose it, right? So that means if you quit your job, then you could be a lounge singer, right?
Or you could just lounge around.
This is Grant and Taylor Hughes. for my show, the Grass and Taylor Show. See you next week. Have a great week, and goodbye for now. And if I ever get popular, goodbye for now will be my tagline.
Right. I just changed my pants.
You changed your pants? Is that pretty silly or what?
No, I couldn't hold it back.
Oh, really? You couldn't hold it back? Did you pee a lot?
Is that that I'm not wearing the pants?
Oh, you said maybe you should get a diaper.
Maybe.
So you need those, what do they call those old people's diapers? What are they? Depends. You need that?
No, yeah.
So really, you should get a little, bigger trash can.
I know. Oh, God. One day this week.
So stupid that we don't get it.
Two events?
Two events? What?
I said tomorrow and Tuesday are busy. You have to be another day.
I see.
So we have to pack it up tomorrow for the...
Pack it up. Are you going back into the bedroom for anything?
Yeah, I'm going to get my...
Oh, I see.
We're here.
But did you wet yourself?
Huh?
You have to get different the dock. I see. Okay.
Robin.
I'm on shit. Hey. Quick. See, you're getting me distracted and I messed up. Silly girl, you know, you're so silly, you don't have any idea what you're doing, but you're just full of love, outflow, outflow, right? Outflow and center. Right? I can't come up because you hurt my arm all the time. Always hurts. Quick.